is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Adrian Wooldridge, who is Badgett for The Economist magazine. He is most importantly the author of the new book, The Aristocracy of Talent, How Meritocracy Made the Modern World. That meritocracy is now gathering in the United States in New York for the United Nations General Assembly. At the same time, that meritocracy in Mother Britain has gone through some tumbles these last weeks, and Adrian's column Badgett features how the meritocracy deals with reviving itself in train. And Adrian, a very good day to you. Boris Johnson, the meritocrat, a premier right now, made some important changes to his cabinet the last days. Before we plunge into the personalities, cabinet shuffle is something that the U.S. is unfamiliar with. You pick a cabinet, they stay there until they move on at midterms. What does cabinet shuffle mean in the tradition of the English government? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thank you very much for inviting me again. In Britain, cabinet ministers are much more powerful than they are in the United States. In the United States, everything focuses on the president, and the president is the head of the executive agency of government. In Britain, the prime minister is primus inter pares, first amongst equals, and the cabinet ministers really run their own departments and have quite a significant degree of power because they are politicians of some substance in their own right. The prime minister's most important form of power is telling which cabinet ministers should do which jobs. So a cabinet reshuffle is a point where he can assert his power and move somebody from one job to another. Boris Johnson has been relatively sparing in reshuffles. He's had quite a continuous cabinet. When he came in as prime minister, he completely cleaned out all the anti-Brexiteers and put in his own Brexit people. But then he left the cabinet much as it was, with a few tinkerings for reasons of expediency. But now, for the first time, he has done a big cabinet reshuffle. For example, he got rid of the foreign secretary. He moved lots of people from the sidewards around. He got rid of the justice minister. So he put a new top on his government. And in the lower, because the cabinet reshuffle is not just about the cabinet, it's also about the lower ranks. So all of the lower ranks are changed as well. So, you know, up to about 100 people who are on the government payroll moved around. And it's in order to do two things, really. One is to assert the power of the prime minister. As I say, cabinet ministers are much more powerful in Britain than they are in the United States. So the prime minister has to reassert his power every now and again. And second is to revitalize the government, to give it new energy, to put new people in new jobs, and above all, really, to prepare for the next general election. And this is very likely to be the team that will go into the next general election.
That's a puzzle to me. The next general election is not for some years necessarily, but Mr. Johnson has the choice if he wants to call an earlier election. Does this indicate in some fashion that Mr. Johnson is eager to get to the polling, or that he's here for the long term with these decisions?
There is obviously a very lively debate about this, as there is about all these sorts of things. I think that the betting is that he will go for a longer wait for the election rather than a shorter wait for the election. So these people are there to achieve something, to go to take some credit into the election. And the most important, you know, the most eye-catching reshuffle was getting rid of the foreign secretary, who was called Dominic Raab, who really made a bit of a mess over Afghanistan by staying on holiday when the world's foreign policy was being rejigged. He was got rid of and replaced by Liz Truss, who is a very prominent woman. But the most important part of this reshuffle was actually in the housing ministry. There's a new person put into the housing ministry called Michael Gove, who has a record not only of eloquence and intelligence, but also of getting things done as a cabinet minister. And he has changed the title of the housing ministry to the Ministry of Levelling Up, plus housing and communities and things like that. And Boris Johnson's great mission is to make opportunity more equal across the country. because the South had much more opportunity than the North to make opportunity more equal. And so that is now being flagged with its own department. And that really will be the one thing that will make the big difference when he goes into the next election. Has he achieved leveling up, or was it all just an empty slogan?
The two cabinet posts that are most prominent in the United States are the Treasury and State Department. Is that the same for Britain, the Chancellor and the Foreign Secretary?
Yes, absolutely. The Foreign Secretary did change, and the new Foreign Secretary is, significant in many ways, not least because she's a woman, but also because she has leadership ambitions of her own. But the Chancellor, the Treasury, didn't change. It's run by Rishi Sunak, who is exceptionally good, a very safe pair of hands, and also, I think, would like to be leader. So Boris has got these two people who want to take his job, sort of rather cleverly balanced against each other in the Foreign Office and the Treasury.
Yes, and after that, we come to what are social service jobs. I note you've talked about housing. There's justice, there's education, there's health, all of these details. In the United States, the president answers for all of these offices. Is that the same in Britain, or are individual secretaries charged with explaining themselves to the public?
Well, individual secretaries will explain themselves to the public. The prime minister is ultimately in charge, but all of these individual secretaries have a role in explaining themselves to the public, an important one. For example, we got rid of Gavin Williamson, who was the education secretary, and replaced him by somebody else, simply for many reasons, partly because he was incompetent, but partly because he came over so badly on the television and the radio when he was trying to explain what is going on. But I say that we have a different system from yours, but we are moving slowly towards a more presidential system. If you go back to the 1960s, cabinet ministers were really lords of their departments. Now they're not the lords they were. They're more dependent on the prime minister, and Downing Street plays a much more intrusive role in their affairs, particularly in the foreign affairs.
The opposition, Labour, which is not very many numbers compared to Tories, but there is this wonderful protocol called the shadow cabinet. Does the change in the prime minister's cabinet lead to change in the shadow cabinet to respond?
No, it doesn't. It can do, but it doesn't necessarily. And I don't think it will this time. The problem with the Labour Party is not just that it only has roughly 200 seats, so it's much smaller than the Tory Party. But if you ask the average man in the streets, or indeed in many ways the average political journalist, to name the Labour shadow cabinet, they wouldn't be able to do so. It's a collection of grey men and grey women who have made no impression whatsoever on the public mind.
And so Mr. Starmer is the face of Labour Party, and is that correct? He must answer.
That is correct, but the trouble is, he is the face of the Labour Party, but the trouble is that he's also a very grave face for the Labour Party, so he's finding it very hard to break through. So it really is, almost anonymous people, but they are, they're just not a very vivid group of people. They don't have policies, really, that they can talk about.
A modest man with much to be modest about, I understand.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. Well, of course, that wasn't true of Clement Attlee. Clement Attlee was a great prime minister and a very important man who was surrounded by absolutely first-class cabinet ministers in 1945 to 1951. But that is definitely not the case now.
Well, I mention that because I've been reading about that transition from Churchill's cabinet, which was a national cabinet to do with the war, to Clement Attlee. And I've learned to pay attention to the outsiders, so the people who are cast away from the center, because they have a way in British history of coming back into the center. Of these decisions the Prime Minister has made, the one that most interests me is Dominic Raab, because aside from the odd explanation for why he didn't come home for a holiday during the Afghanistan tragedy, he's had a very strong voice in speaking out against what we call human rights violations. I think particularly what he said about the Uyghurs in China, but he's been adamant about Russia as well. And this recent headline about Russia now identified as the mastermind of the murder of Litvinenko in London.
Yep.
Raab has a strong voice. Is he now moved aside from Foreign Secretary? Is he now in a position to come back into the center at some point? Or has he been iced out by the party?
I think you're absolutely right to talk about the fact that the next big person, the next big beast, may well come from outside the inner circle of the current cabinet. And there's a wonderful book written about Winston Churchill by Robert Rhodes James called Winston Churchill, A Study in Failure, about Churchill in the 1930s. And in the 1930s, Churchill was a failure. He was completely iced out of all political influence and political positions. So you're right in that sense. I don't think Dominic Raab is that person because I don't think he has enough independent support within the Conservative Party. He's been very vocal on human rights issues. He is, in fact, a human rights lawyer who knows this stuff inside out. So that those are both important recommendations for him. But I don't, you know, when he ran for the leadership of the Conservative Party, he only got about 30 votes and drops out very quickly. There are people who are more significant challenges to Boris Johnson. The two that he's most frightened of, Boris is most frightened of, are Elizabeth Truss, Liz Truss, the new Foreign Secretary, and Rishi Sunak, who's the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
I'm speaking with Adrian Wooldridge, and he's doing me the favor of helping me understand British cabinet history, at least dating back 70 years. He is the author, he is Badgett for The Economist. He's also the, importantly, the author of The Aristocracy of Talent, How Meritocracy Made the Modern World. And that's what we're talking about. These are the meritocrats of Mother Britain. However, some of them now are dealing with the meritocrats of the United States, the colonies. And so when we come back, Boris Johnson in New York, Boris Johnson in Washington. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.